Welcome to Wednesday's programme. Good afternoon to you. How are you doing? It's a glorious afternoon here in Salford. Spring, I'm not going to say it. It's too much of a cliche. Ah, come on, spring has sprung. Lovely afternoon, and I'm in good form. Hope you're in good form too. Thanks for choosing the programme. Tweet me anytime between now and 7 o'clock. It's at BBG Richie.
It's the BBG, not the BBC.
You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Absolutely delighted that the legendary Kevin Sharkey will join me on the programme in about 25 minutes' time. I'm thrilled about that. Kevin has exhibited his paintings all over the world. His paintings have been bought by people like Charles Saatchi, Courtney Love, Whitney Houston, Matt Lucas. He's an actor, a television presenter, and Ireland's first ever biracial TV presenter. Great guy, Kevin Sharkey, this hour. And later on in the programme, coming back on the programme, Dr. Thomas Binder, live from Switzerland, cardiologist in Switzerland, whose career was destroyed last year when he raised the alarm about the total ineffectiveness, the useless PCR tests. The PCR tests, which are completely ineffective and give false positives. He raised the alarm about that and challenged lockdown and lockdowns in general and paid the price for it. Thomas Binder on the programme in hour two. So I'm excited about today's programme. And it is nice. I think there is a bit of a spring, no pun intended, in your step when you get weather like today. It's a bit lovely out there. All righty. Alex in Australia, your brother Jake says that I should say hi to you and thank you for introducing him to this radio programme. Alex got out of Blighty before the shite hit the fan, Jake tells me on Twitter. Done that, Jake. There you are. Thanks for getting in touch. I appreciate it. Nice to hear from you. The Chris Whitty thing then. He is England's chief medical officer, the UK's chief medical officer, England's chief medical officer. I put an article on richieallen.co.uk today. Nowhere in the article or in the headline did I say that Chris Whitty admitted that the pandemic is a hoax. But I did say that on Twitter and on Facebook in selling the story. I said chief medical officer admits it's a hoax. It's an admission by definition. Of course, Chris Whitty didn't go on television last night and say, hey, the pandemic's a hoax. Hey, it's all a hoax. Of course he didn't. But he did by definition because of what he said. And not only what he said last night, but what he has been saying since the outset of this scam. Now, when I say scam, I don't mean the virus is a hoax, because I don't know. I've written about that too, but I don't know. I'm open-minded. I'm open to anything. Let's hear what Chris Whitty had to say last night, very briefly, because I covered this extensively yesterday, but it's important. Here is Whitty at Downing Street last evening.
In terms of eliminating from the UK, this is a disease which is got most people who have it have mild symptoms or in some cases no symptoms who can then transmit it. That makes it very difficult to find. We have good vaccines, very good vaccines, but they're not 100% effective vaccines.
Most, that is the majority of people who get it, mild symptoms or no symptoms, it's hard to find. That isn't a pandemic. That couldn't be a pandemic. Okay, that's the admission by definition, that it isn't a pandemic. He doesn't have to say it's not a pandemic or claims that it is a pandemic or a hoax. He doesn't have to say that. He has said it because he has referred to coronavirus as a pandemic and an epidemic probably 5,000 times in the last 12 months. Here is Chris Whitty on May the 11th last year. This is around about 6 weeks into the lockdown. Listen carefully.
To balance two things. The seriousness of this virus as an epidemic, and it clearly is a very serious epidemic, but equally the fact that actually the great majority of people will not die from this. And I'll just repeat something I said right at the beginning, because I think it's worth reinforcing. Most people...
Okay, he dilutes the whole thing down here, right?
People, a significant proportion of people will not get this virus at all.
Significant portion won't get it.
At any point in the epidemic, which is going to go on for a long period of time. Of those who do, some of them will get the virus without even knowing it. They will have the virus with no symptoms at all, asymptomatic carriage, and we know that happens.
Okay.
Of those who get symptoms, the great majority, probably 80%, will have a mild or moderate disease. Might be bad enough for them to have to go to bed for a few days, not bad enough for them to have to go to the doctor. An unfortunate minority will have to go as far as hospital, but the majority of those will just need oxygen and will then leave hospital. And then a minority of those will end up having to go to severe and critical care, and some of those, sadly, will die. But that's a minority. It's 1% or possibly even less than 1% overall. And even in the highest risk group, this is significantly less than 20%, i.e. the great majority of people, even the very highest groups, if they catch this virus, will not die.
Yeah, pretty simple. That was back in May last year, and he, well, touched on it again yesterday. That isn't a pandemic, let alone a global pandemic. That isn't anything that the public should worry about, apart from those people who generally do have to worry about viral infections. And those people, of course, are people with so-called comorbidities and generally very senior people. There's no pandemic. That is an admission by definition that the pandemic is a hoax. That's the chief medical officer. That's the one of two main men in SAGE, the Scientific Advisory Group on Emergencies, which is basically driving the response to coronavirus, whatever coronavirus is. I won't go into the implications anymore because they're obvious, and I covered it on the programme yesterday. Vaccinating children, huge story this. Before we hear from Neil Ferguson, Professor Lockdown, before we hear from him, let me tell you this. The Telegraph newspaper claimed today that it has seen provisional government plans to begin vaccinating children as early as August, right? So as early as late summer. Two sources told the paper that if all goes to plan, children could begin to be vaccinated by August, because they're vaccinating currently 3 million people a week. And if the 3 million vaccinations a week continues, they'll have plenty of time then to begin vaccinating the kiddies. This is controversial, as it should be, because children do not get coronavirus. They just don't get it. And those who do get it don't get ill, and children don't pass it on. And an important thing to remember is that the government admitted last week that children returning to school hasn't led to any rise in infections. Remember, just before the children went back to school, secondary school children, Boris Johnson said they should wear masks in classrooms and children should get 2 lateral flow coronavirus tests a week. Lots of children in secondary school have been getting those tests, and the results came in last week. 2.75 million, so 2.76 million tests were carried out on secondary pupils since they went back to school, and only 1,300 kids tested positive for the virus. Those kids weren't sick. There was nothing wrong with them. So you can imagine the testing was throwing up false positives. Right, children don't get it, they don't carry it, they don't pass it on. Of the 2.76 million tests given to children, 0.05% of those came back positive, and there is even room, well, there's a lot of room to doubt that number. It's probably lower. What parent in the world would allow their child have a vaccination or an experimental treatment for an illness that presents no risk whatsoever to their children? What parents would do that? Well, the government is hell-bent on vaccinating children, have no doubt about that. And Neil Ferguson, he of the 500,000 people might die of coronavirus, was on BBC Breakfast this morning speaking about the prospect of vaccinating children. Here he is.
There are two key things here. First of all, children, with some notable exceptions of small minority groups of vulnerabilities, but most children don't get seriously ill. But particularly older children, teenagers, we know can transmit the virus and do therefore contribute to transmission.
So nonsense. The presenter should have jumped in right there and said, what about the news last week from the 2.76 million lateral flow tests? What about the news that 0.05% of them came back positive? But of course, the presenter sits on her hands, does nothing, just lets them carry on.
So the rationale for vaccinating particularly older children, teenagers, would be to reduce transmission.
No, there's no rationale in vaccinating children. None. We know this now. Again, the presenter sits on his hands and says nada.
And also protect them for when they become older. And so there is a rationale. The problem at the moment is all the kind of scientific studies, the clinical trials of the vaccines run to date were done in adults. So we're having to catch up. There are currently studies underway to look, make sure the vaccines are very safe in children. and they work, we expect they will. And at that point, when that data comes in, we'll be able to evaluate, you know, do we want to go forward with vaccination of children?
Yeah, yeah. The Oxford University is trialling the AstraZeneca vaccine on children right now. What parents put their children up for a trial? I wouldn't dream, and I'm not going to do it now. I wouldn't dream, I haven't done it before, in judging parents. But you'd have to ask questions, wouldn't you? We'll leave that alone for now. More on that with Thomas Binder in hour two. I have no doubt about that. There's news. We haven't heard from her in a while. There's Greta News.
They sweep their mess under the carpet for our generation to clean up and solve.
How dare you? You have stolen my dreams, my childhood, with your empty words. People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction. How dare you?
How dare you? Winchester University wants to spend £24,000 on a bronze sculpture of Greta. Residents are up in arms, apparently, saying, what the hell has Greta Thunberg got to do with our city? Some of the residents have recommended that they build a statue to a local gentleman called Kev, who was well known for selling the big issue and pulling himself up by his bootstraps. Emma Webb is a political commentator speaking about Greta and the statue. Here she is speaking with Mike Graham from Talk Radio.
Yeah, local residents have quite rightly pointed out that Greta Thunberg has very little to do with Winchester. Statues are normally put up to sort of furnish the public space in a way that makes it feel homely for the residents and has ties to the particular area. And some local residents have said that they were hoping or would have preferred for a big issue seller whose name is Kev Colick to have been given a statue. And this gentleman was, he's become a sort of icon in Winchester. And he was put into care as a child, was obviously homeless selling the big issue, is no longer homeless, and is known for dressing up as a Christmas tree and raising money for children in need. So this guy's obviously more than just a little bit of a local hero and deserves a statue, I think, in my opinion. And it would give people, I think, in the local area, but also, you know, anyone visiting the area, a sense that anyone in any situation, however terrible, can aspire to become somebody that is so sort of loved in the local area that they're given a statue. Whereas someone like Greta Thunberg, if we look at the behaviour of Extinction Rebellion, not just in the last couple of days involving themselves in the protests, but also before, you know, being it quite typical on various protests that they commit all sorts of criminal damage. I think that if we're going to start talking about role models who deserve statues in a local area in Winchester, it should be given to Kev Colick, not to a Swedish climate activist.
Yeah, Kev Colick sounds like a guy that we'd be interested in speaking with. We might reach out to him. I think I will, in fact. Staying with Greta and climate change. Climate change is causing small willies. Did you hear this? It's causing teeny tallywhackers. I can't even say it. Small penises are down to climate change, apparently.
What kind of fuckery are you?
I know, Amy. Penises and genitals are shrinking and becoming malformed because of pollution. Who says that? Dr. Shanna Swan. Now, I've written about her. Dr. Shanna Swan has been studying infertility in men for years, and Dr. Shanna studies infertility but doesn't factor in or doesn't think about or consider non-ionizing radiation, mobile phone towers or cell phone towers, as you call them, across the pond, and phones themselves and all of that, Wi-Fi. No, don't say that to Dr. Shanna Swan. She believes that, I can't even pronounce this, is it... Oh, Jesus. I knew I'd get into trouble. It's phthalates. Phthalates or phthalates, that's a chemical. Phthalates, right, it's a chemical which is used in manufacturing plastic, and she believes that an overexposure to phthalates has caused problems for men and has caused infertility, and now it's causing a penile size problem, apparently. Babies being born with tiny todgers. Babies are being born with tiny todgers. This really cracked up my friend Spiro Skouras, by the way. afternoon, Spiro, or good morning, I should say. This cracked him right up. So as a result, yeah, of pollution and this plastic stuff, babies are being born with small todgers, tiny todgers. So dads, listen, there's another reason to stay the hell out of the delivery room. You don't need the midwife thinking it's down to you, do you? Right. You don't need the midwife looking at you and smirking at you. Or you could stay for the birth, and if the penis is virtually non-existent, whisper climate change to the midwife and wink at her, and she'll understand. It might be good news for future Jewish babies when the rabbis can't find it, you know.
What kind of fuckery is this?
I know, I'm gone. That's me. That's me. That's anti-Semitism. If ever there was anti-Semitism, that's it. So what are we, 15 minutes past five? Ed Dave, the leader of the Liberal Democrats, and Steve Baker, backbench Tory, are not happy with the government's plans to extend the Coronavirus Act and therefore extend powers until October, powers to lock down and to impose restrictions. From the COVID Recovery Group, anti-lockdown MP Steve Baker speaking with, who was he speaking with? Who was he speaking with? I think LBC, it doesn't matter.
We, 63 of us, wrote to the Prime Minister, and what we did is we set out a plan that was intimately connected to the vaccination rollout. So we said, for example, that schools should go back on the 8th of March, and we're very pleased that they have. That's why I'm sitting here in Parliament. If the schools are back, I think I should be back in Parliament. We said that hospitality should open by Easter, because by then two-thirds of the vulnerable will have been vaccinated and have that vaccination take effect. And what we said was by the time that all of the vulnerable, the top nine groups and accounting for 99% of the deaths, by the time all of them are vaccinated, we said that we believe that there was a very weak case. We said there was no case for legislative restrictions once we got into May. So, you know, that's what we said. We obviously don't have the resources of government. We set out a plan connected to the vaccination schedule. At the moment, it looks like the data is better than anyone's best estimates. So I do certainly think the Prime Minister should be willing, in following the data, to bring the plan forwards because of the costs of the plan.
There you are. Bring it forward, says Steve Baker. Ed Davey, leader of the Liberal Democrats, speaking at Prime Minister's questions today. Challenge Johnson on this. You'll hear Davey and you'll hear the answer.
The Prime Minister talks about restoring freedoms as we emerge from the lockdown. It is pushing a bill that will restrict one of our most fundamental freedoms, the right to peaceful protest and peaceful assembly. And tomorrow, he is asking for another blank cheque to restrict everyone's freedoms until September, even though we now know the vast bulk of the Coronavirus Act is not needed to tackle the pandemic. So will the Prime Minister, for once, match his actions to his words, drop these draconian laws, and instead publish a roadmap to revive civil liberties and freedoms in our country?
I sympathise very much with his desire to see freedoms restored, and I want to do that as fast as we possibly can. That's why we've set out the cautious but we hope irreversible roadmap that we have, which I hope that he supports. I hope the Right Honourable Gentleman also supports, so you can never tell, Mr. Speaker. But what we also want to do is to make sure that we're able to deal with the very considerable backlog that we've faced because of the pandemic. So making sure that we have powers still to accelerate court procedures with Zoom courts, to make sure that we allow volunteers to continue to help in the NHS, retired staff to come back to the colours, powers that are necessary in education. It is important to be able to continue with those special measures for the months ahead. And that's why we've set out the bill as we have.
Yeah. Another story which is big, I think, and is worth mentioning just for a moment or two. Brendan Wren is a professor of vaccinology at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. And he wrote an article in today's Daily Mail, so it was in the paper and online as well. And he said that a third wave of coronavirus caused by vaccine refuseniks would devastate the country returning to normal, or the chances of the country returning to normal. He said there's no excuse for not having a vaccine. This guy went on to say that, you know, he's ordinarily somebody who balks at the notion of mandating vaccines, making vaccines compulsory. But he did say that he agrees that the vaccines should be made compulsory for healthcare workers, care home workers specifically. He went on to say then, this guy, and this is important. He says, though I do not believe we are there yet, a third wave caused by vaccine refuseniks would devastate our return to normality. Britain cannot be held to ransom because of a minority who don't understand the value of the vaccines, risking their own health and that of others in the process. And I made the point on richieallen.co.uk today, it doesn't matter whether it's right or not, it's just my opinion, that they're going to blame people. They're going to encourage people who've had the vaccine to look kind of most unfavourably on those who haven't, to blame them for the delayed exit from lockdown, and maybe blame the unvaccinated for future lockdowns as well. And I think they'll harp on this whole thing about risking other people's health by not getting a vaccine. It's a dirty trick, but it could have very serious consequences. And when I put that article on the website today, I did notice on social media that quite a number of listeners to this programme posted messages saying that you had already fallen out with people because you had told them that, or signalled your intention not to have the vaccine, and that you'd fallen out with people already. It's coming up for 21 minutes past the hour. BBG Richie on Twitter. Dr. Thomas Binder from Switzerland in the second hour. Before that, in a few minutes, legendary Irishman Kevin Sharkey. First time on this programme. Really excited about that. A lot to talk about with Kevin between now and 6 o'clock. As I said, tweet to me, and I will make room for the tweets as I go along, as per usual. What have I got lined up? I've got a tune lined up is what I've got. So here it is. It's Denise Williams, and let's hear it for the boy. The Richie Allen Radio Show for the 24th of March, 2021, Wednesday's programme, Drive Time. You all right, you are? You well this Wednesday, yeah? Fill your boots, man. Denise Williams and let's hear it for the boy on the Richie Allen Radio Show, 23 and a half minutes past 5 o'clock. On Wednesday's programme, welcome to it if you're just joining me. Thanks for the tweets at BBG Richie on Twitter. Love reading your tweets as we go along. And the word legend is often overused. It is. The Sunday Independent described my first guest as a true Irish legend. Sky News once called him a genius. And I mentioned at the top of the programme that his paintings have been collected by luminaries like Michael Portillo, Whitney Houston, Matt Lucas, the President of Ireland, Michael D. Higgins, and many more. He's an actor, TV presenter, and he's Ireland's first ever biracial TV presenter, in fact. One-time presidential candidate as well. Let's welcome to the programme Kevin Sharkey. Kevin, thanks for taking the call. How are you?
I'm grand. How are you keeping?
Not too shabby, and thanks for taking the time out to do it today. I'm delighted you're on. Getting a load of feedback there, so I'll cut your mic while you're not speaking, and I'll get out, and then I'll get out of your way when you're chatting. Kevin, I was fascinated listening to you speaking on national radio yesterday, News Talk, particularly because immigration and reforms to immigration is a big story in the UK here today. And I thought you spoke brilliantly about identity politics and about kind of how we can't really have a conversation about immigration without it descending into name-calling and accusations. We seem to have lost the ability to just talk about the impact that it's having on societies, not just in the UK and Ireland, but everywhere else, without it descending into nonsense. Why is that?
Well, it's very clever, really. It's when you remember when you were at school and people wanted to shut you down. And often name-calling was a very effective way to do that, because nobody wants to be singled out or accused of something that appears to be uncivilized. And what's happened over the last few years is, while the political class have made a decision, probably based very much on their education, because I think a lot of those posh lads learn that people equal wealth. So when you look at a country, say, like Ireland or even the UK, while there are certain areas that are very, very populated, there's a lot that isn't. Now, from our point of view, that's our heritage, that's our culture, that's our country. But to the men in the suits, to the bankers and to the politicians, it's basically a redevelopment potential. It's room for more consumers, because the whole drive behind Europe, behind the politicians who are basically owned by Europe, is more consumers, more people to buy things, really. I mean, you know, if you look at places like Ireland and rural Ireland, which is changing so dramatically, because these posh lads, their ethos is more people equals wealth, but we know that the wealth doesn't trickle down. So what you have is two things happening. On one hand, they're telling themselves and they're telling people that this is good for the economy, this is good for the long-term future of the country. But the people who have to actually live in the midst of it find there's no benefits for them. And what happens is you have situations like in Ireland, for example, where when I was running for the presidency of Ireland, I suggested, imagine that Irish people should be housed in priority, because basically their grandparents and their parents had lived on, Jesus, you know this, Richie, they'd lived on spuds. Yeah. And they did so, and they worked hard and they died, but they did that believing they were leaving an inheritance behind for their children, for their grandchildren. And we believe that. Now what we have is people who have taken the whole issue of racism and turned it into a censorship tool. For example, when you have a situation where tribalism, which we all know about in Ireland, because all those small counties, everybody had an allegiance to their own county, the same in the UK, I'm sure. But what happened was, what once used to be tribal allegiance, what you once used to be wanting your team to win, has been rebranded and renamed as racism. So if you have, I grew up in Ireland in the 60s and 70s, and nationalism was everywhere. There was what was going on in the north, but ultimately you had Catholics and Protestants fighting with each other over religion. And what that did was that allowed other people to make decisions which affected them both. And racism now has become almost hurting people's feelings by saying something they don't like. You know, the real racism that causes huge problems for Black people is not the name calling. Really, you know, that's, people get called names all the time. It's the effect that it has on your dignity, on your rights as a human being, to be at least viewed as equal. And what the ruling classes have done is they've turned it on its head. So that if you don't go along with the program, you're racist. Or if you have an issue, if you want to talk about immigration, you're Islamophobe or you're anti-immigration. And me, myself, whose father was an immigrant in Ireland, in the 1960s, I understand the need to help people. You know, we do that all around the world, in England and in Ireland. We're famous for it. But my mother, if she'd gone and fed the neighbor's kids before she fed us, they'd have had her in the madhouse on Monday morning.
She would.
Won't well in the head.
Yeah. You know?
So what we now have is this policy, this idea that all the political parties are on board with it. And they basically, it is the fact that how do you introduce millions more consumers to a society which has not been prepared for the integration. The people who are coming are not being integrated in a way that would be long-term helpful to them. And that as a result, Ireland is now starting to develop small cliques of different nationalities in different places. And I've seen in England, in Manchester, in Birmingham, you know, you don't have to be racist to say, where are all the white people?
Yeah, and, in some places,
and as a black man, for me, because where I grew up, I didn't see a black person until I was 13. So I grew up in a very white environment and I learned a lot about racism. Now, what I learned predominantly was that I spent my entire life listening to white people telling me about racism, and it's a bit like me giving advice to a woman about premenstrual cramps. My opinion is not relevant, and it's a hard thing for some of these white people because they feel they should have a say on it. But the actual truth is that when you look at people in general, we're a tribal race, and what used to be, you know, considered tribalism, as I said, has now become racism. So that people have got into the idea that only white people can be racist.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
This is profound, Kevin. This is profound. Can I ask you on that? Can I ask you a question on that? I've never been a virtue signaller in my life. Never. I'm not the guy looking for an opportunity, you know, to show that I'm down with black people or with anybody else. I've never done that. But equally, when I read surveys saying that whether I like to admit it or not, and by surveys I mean various academic papers, not surveys, that say that whether I like it or not, I've got some unconscious bias towards black people or people of colour. And what I say about that is, I say, well, look, I'm pretty sure I don't, but I think you framed it beautifully. Tribalism is a different thing entirely. Maybe I'm predisposed to, you know, to not to favour, but to go with those that look and sound like me, maybe. And that might not be racism, you know?
No. Let me tell you something, Richie. That's a very important point you make, because I said it to somebody one day. Imagine this. We're on a cruise ship somewhere. You come into the dining room, there's some Germans over there, there's some Irish people over there, there's some black people over there, there's some Pakistani people over there. You will naturally gravitate to the people you feel most comfortable with. People see me and they see a black man, but my natural comfort zone is, as I was brought up around white people, I feel very comfortable. I am less comfortable around black people because I had no experience of black people. So the demonization of black people, which has gone on for years throughout the media and is perpetrated even still, but we'll get onto that with things like MTV. Yeah. The point is, when I looked really deeply, Richie, into racism and where it came from and what it was, I had honestly to start with myself. And when I started with myself, I thought, you know what? You have a particular opinion that's probably a bit ignorant about Romanians, that's probably a bit ignorant about Indians. And I really looked hard and I realized something very important was that I have just as much ability to be racist as a white person. And when I went to London and I met black people, I was astounded, Richie, that the things they said about white people, I was like, what the? Because I thought it was a one-way street. And this is what's has been happened, is it's been hijacked by the left to suggest that we all have, you should have white guilt. And this is bullshit, because ultimately, when I look at my experience in a white country like Ireland, I've had a remarkable, like, I'm the most successful Irish artist that ever lived. I've sold over 10,000 paintings. And that happened with the support of the Irish people. That happened because people looked past this and looked at my work and respected it and bought it. And so my feeling when people talk about, is the UK racist, is, Richie, my feeling is this, we are all honest with ourselves, then we have prejudices against people we're not comfortable with. That's not the same as degrading somebody because of the color of their skin. That's a very different thing. And it's a very subtle difference that's been brought in to make people like yourself question themselves. Like, well, I don't think I am. Well, of course, the thing is, we all have prejudices. The Indians have prejudices. They don't like the Pakistanis. The Africans don't like the Senegalese. And we beat ourselves up. And white people do this. They beat themselves up all the time because they think they're the only bloody ones. No, they're not.
They're not. You know, the thing, when I was younger, who did we have? I mean, I'm a sports fan, so but I get asked sometimes, not often, but what was it like in Ireland, Richie, when you were young? I'm 46 now. And I say, well, we had Paul McGrath, worshipped him. I'm a Man United fan, worshipped Paul before he went to Aston Villa. I said, you know, again, football, we had Chris Hughton, Samantha Mumba. You'll always get a mention, Kevin. I came into the media in Ireland in the mid-1990s. But outside of that, you know, I couldn't name too many Irish black people who'd been successful. And the thing, I've said this as well before, I would be the first to say that I was very suspicious of black people when I first came to England in when I was like 14, 15, when I was first going on the boat on my own to watch United. I was very suspicious of black people. And I put that down to, but I put that down to, you know, growing up watching American television programs where the bad dude was always a black guy. I mean, he was always...
He was the first one to get eaten by the dinosaur.
This is it, the black dude. That's right.
Yeah, but that's very important what you're saying, Richie, because I grew up with exactly the same programming that told me, I mean, my mother's thing for me was, well, as long as you don't end up a burglar. I mean, that was her highest expectation for me. And I think that she, like many, many people, have been fed, and we still are. This is important, Richie, because I'll tell you why it's important. Right now, there's a big debate going on about... Megan Thee Stallion and Cardi B's performance at the Grammy Awards. They came out and it was a very raunchy performance. The song is all about whores and prostitutes and orgasms, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But the point is, the reason I'm bringing this up now is the media, the mainstream media, YouTube, these people are responsible for the content on their stations. So when we grew up, we had RT's version. Like, mostly I saw black babies with flies around their eyes. Occasionally, you'd have a great giggle because you'd see some woman with her ditties out, and that was unheard of in Donegal back in the day. But you had no idea. You had no idea about what Africa was about, other than what you were told. So you're fed this increasingly negative dialogue. And what's happened now is you have people attacking, say, Cardi B. Now, I'll mention something about Cardi B. Cardi B is a woman who says herself she used to drug men and steal their money when she knocked them out. Look at who... YouTube. Look at who the American media put forward as role models for black people.
Is that deliberate, Kevin?
Of course. You have to ask yourself this.
Yeah.
Look at YouTube. The F word, the F-A-G-G-O-T word, which we cannot say that word, right? But the N word, you say that right now on air, you're out of a job. But if I go to the YouTube now and I turn that on, if every song doesn't have the word N-I-G-G-E or in it, it's not going to get played. If it doesn't have marijuana, if it doesn't have drug dealing, if it doesn't have disrespect to the police or women, it is not going to get played. Now, YouTube should be shut down for hate speech, because when I turn that on, it breaks my heart to hear the dialogue where the word is repeated again and again, and it actually is a prerequisite to getting ahead.
So it's a caricature of a black person then. It's basically a caricature, yeah.
Exactly. Look at Jay-Z. Look at those guys who were confessed drug dealers, yet they made it to the top. The people who are behind the entertainment music in America have done something very, very sneaky. They've stolen black culture and they're selling it back to black people, but they're doing it, in my opinion, with the worst kind of role models for young black girls and young black guys who are telling you, you are not worth anything unless you can tweak your ass up and down in the air. You are not worth anything. And this is where it really becomes serious, because there are policemen in America who've never met a black people, never met a black person. But they know that these kids who go around and dress like their idols, who basically dress like gangsters, when they encounter them in the street, Richie, they don't see a 14-year-old kid with his truck hanging down his cap on back the front. They see a ganger, a banger. And that's what's happened, is a lot of people's first and only impression, like yourself and like mine, was very negative. And that subtle racism is far, far worse than somebody saying, piss off back to your own country.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. We've got Kevin Sharkey on the line. I know you know who Kevin is. Hugely successful and popular artist, one-time presidential candidate. His resume is ridiculous. Kevin was homeless at one time, got himself back on his feet, television presenter, producer, genius according to Sky News, and the Sunday Independent called him a true Irish legend. I'll go along with that. I'm not buttering you up now. You are. It's great to have you on talking about these things. You did wade into on News Talk yesterday your concern. And again, I noticed around social media today, I noticed one or two accusations of anti-vax. As far as I can tell, and I went over you today with a fine tooth comb, if you felt a shiver down your spine today, Kevin, that was me looking into your background. I was looking into everything that you said. You're obviously not an anti-bloody vaxxer. Not at all. No. But you went on national radio and you said, look, these vaccines are brand new. We better be damn sure, I'm sure you didn't swear, that we've gotten this right and that we don't do harm with these vaccines. And the presenter very quickly shut you down and moved on. What were you trying to say?
I'll tell you what I was trying to say, Richie, is this. If I invited you to my house and I offered you a sandwich, would you eat it without asking me what was in it?
No, I wouldn't.
No, you wouldn't. No. So now there are millions of people around the world who are putting their trust in the medical establishment without knowing what it is they're injecting, not just into themselves, but into their children. And when you do a bit of research on this and a bit of background, what you find out very, very quickly is something which is very, very worrying, which is a traditional vaccine is a very particular thing. I'm not anti-vaccine, but I'm very much anti-stupidity. And if you're going to put something into your child or into your body, you need to read the contents. And when you do read the contents of most vaccines, it's terrifying, Richie. I mean, I have a theory that most of the human misery that we see in life, whether it's obesity, depression, alcoholism, I think personally, this is just my own opinion, that shoving mercury and aluminium into newborn children is not going to help them in the long run. And I believe that there's a real possibility that the vaccines which they're giving children are doing the opposite of keeping them healthy. Now, here's the thing about this so-called vaccine. It's not a vaccine. And the very fact that I know that, and that people can go and research this for themselves, what they'll find out is it's a gene therapy. A very different thing than a vaccine. And what people are being told is that this vaccine. No. If they told people it was a gene therapy, most people would say, well, I don't know, I like the sound of that. And what's that got to do with coronavirus?
Yeah.
So this mining together of this supposedly lethal disease, which is highly contagious, in fact, so contagious, you've got to stay 2 meters apart, but when they want to test you for it, they've got to almost puncture your brain to find some. Like, if it is that contagious, I should be able to just spit in the cup. So yeah. I'm suspicious of the whole thing anyway, but when I see the effects of it, Richie, and what it's doing to society, the pieces start to come together. They, in my opinion, have come out of the shadows, the people who see this as a wonderful opportunity for a reset. And I don't think this has anything to do with health at all. You look around the world at the moment, the crime rate, because of the lockdowns, has plummeted. Pollution has come down by 25%. The stock market is through the roof. Small businesses are going out of business, but big businesses are raking it in. So it isn't a disaster for everybody. And this is what seems to me to be happening, is that people are looking, they're not asking the basic, simple questions. And I say to people, don't take my word for it. But if you have to sign a piece of paper that say, this injection we're about to give you, it could kill you. It might not, but it could kill you. Whoa.
Yeah.
You better be sure. before you give that to your parents, before you give that to your children, or before you take that yourself, that you've at least read what's on the back of the box. You owe it to yourself. And to people who think, oh, I don't know, the man in the white coat says it's okay. Well, let me tell you something. Donald Trump, Leo Varadkar, and Boris Johnson, three of the most compromised men I've ever come across in my life, but then most top politicians are, because that's how they do their part.
How would you describe compromise, Kevin? In what way?
Compromised, I would tell you this. To me, a compromised man is a person or a politician who's in a position where their private life could cause them, if revealed, to be a huge embarrassment and derail their careers. And I've seen it again and again. I mean, you know, you look at Boris Johnson. If I was building a shed and there was two guys, one with no arms and one with no legs, I'd pick the guy with no legs over Boris Johnson, because that man looks like he couldn't find his trousers in the morning. And yet, here are these guys who should be laughed at. And we were laughing at them a year ago, but they now are affecting the breath that your child gets. They're coming up with these... these strategies and these new laws. And what is happening? Look at Israel. It's happening all over the world. And I said in the beginning, could this just be incompetence? But then it was so orchestrated, I thought, no, it can't be incompetence, because the unicism right around the world, in Australia, New Zealand, the same liberties are being taken away. The same people are being silenced. And they're the people who are questioning this. So for me right now, I really, Richie, genuinely think this is the darkest time in the history of my life and in the history of humanity, because when Bill Gates, Donald Trump, and these people stand up and say, oh, this is safe. How do they know that?
They don't know.
They don't know. But yet I have videos of each one of them promising people, Netanyahu, the biggest terrorist in the world, he says, oh, it's safe. That's a lie. They're all lying. Now, why are they all lying together? And why have none of these intelligent men, think about it, not one of them said, you know, it's not a vaccine? Because you look it up. It's not.
It isn't a vaccine. Are you stunned? Are you as stunned as me that Israelis, without getting too deep into it, but many Israelis will have had a great grandparent or a grandparent who perished in Auschwitz or Sobibor or somewhere, and yet they were told a few weeks ago, listen, you've got to have a green passport to get into a hotel or a gym. And Israelis, of all people, Kevin, seem to have just gone along with it.
Yeah, and I think mostly, you know, what you said just there, gone along with it. This is something that's been mystifying me for the last year, because I was thinking, well, where are the riots? I mean, like, literally, because, you know, with this level of change, you would expect some disruption. And I thought, where's the graffiti saying, you know, the government or whatever? But then I slowly realized that the level of compliance, not just here, but in the UK and all around the world, was like, how is this happening that nobody is losing the plot? And then I looked further into it and discovered that for years now, and people can look this up for themselves, that NASA admit that for years they've been spraying the ozone with lithium. Now, to those of you who don't know, lithium is one of the most dangerous but strongest antipsychotic drugs there is. So if you marry that, lithium being sprayed into the air, and I see these, I'm not a, as I said, someone said to me recently, you couldn't lend us a few conspiracy theories, because all minds have come through. But the truth is, we are no longer in an area of conspiracy theories, where what we're seeing happening here has to be identified. It has to be talked about. And on the mainstream media, they have done a blanket job of not talking about
it. Kevin, Do you know what you just said there? Can I just say this? I've had pilots on this program. Geoengineering is a real thing. We know that bee colonies are collapsing around the world because of dementia. We know that bees, all levels of aluminium are being found in bees. It's coming from the skies. Some of my great friends and closest friends don't agree with this. They say, Richie, you're crazy. I know what's going on. So the reason I'm saying that is because some of the listeners are probably expecting me to jump all over you and challenge it. I won't challenge it, because I believe it. I believe it is happening. And just go back to last year. I never saw this coming. I've interviewed men and women who've, you know, been researching things like Agenda 2030 for years, and they've always warned me on my programs that, you know, dystopian kind of world is coming, Richie, and this is how it's coming. But none of them got this. They didn't see this coming as a kind of a fake pandemic. Now, I'm prepared to accept that coronavirus itself might be real. I've no problem with that. It might be. I might have had it last year. But did you see this, Kevin? I mean, I never saw this 12 months ago. I never thought that we'd be, kept apart from our grandparents, told to close our businesses.
If you'd have told me there wouldn't be a pub in Ireland open for a year, I'd have lost all my money betting that you're wrong. Yeah. And the thing is, and this is really important, this distancing of people, this masking of people, this separation of people, this has been done before. Like what you mentioned with the Israelis, yes, I would have thought that Israel would have been so sensitive to the idea of creating a two-tier society instantly, overnight, based on telling people you have to take, you will lose your job if you don't take this vaccine. You will lose your rights if you don't take. This isn't about, we can tell you, we can promise you it's safe. You have to take it, you keep your job. No, this is about you have to take part in the biggest experiment that's ever been done on mankind. And if they get this wrong, Richie, and I honestly, genuinely, I'm terrified that they've already gotten it wrong and that what they're doing with this new gene therapy, which by the way, inside of that gene therapy, there is a synthetic coronavirus. So effectively, as they give millions of people this injection, they're actually giving them coronavirus. Yes, it's a synthetic version. And the theory is that synthetic version will fight off the real version when you come into contact with it. But Richie, when you have a 98.7% recovery rate, what the hell do you want to
vaccinate?
What the hell do you want to risk your life on something that, as you said, you recovered from? Coronavirus, by the way, is called in the Burke's Peerage, which is one of the oldest and most respected medical journals in the world. It's described as the common cold. So I think this, I know this whole thing's a hoax. I know some very clever guys said, we'll bring it in the flu season. That we can basically, as you know yourself, in Ireland, there hasn't been one single case of flu this year. Wonder why that was.
And here.
Yeah, and there, you see? And that's why it is so clever. But also, the lethargy that people are responding with, the lack of anger. Richie, when I was young in Ireland, I grew up in rural Ireland. And as you know, in rural Ireland, we were all Catholics. There was a lot of confession. There was a lot of, bearing your soul to the clergy. And I think the result of that was that the clergy were sitting in confession weekly, hearing some of the horriblest things you've ever heard. But ultimately, they were hearing some very dark things. And I think together, collectively, what they next did in 1954 is explained away like this. When I heard that we had the eighth highest level of fluoride in the water in the world in Ireland, I was thinking, Jesus, Mary and Joseph, could that be right? So I looked up as to why other people didn't put fluoride in the water, and they all to a man said it was poisonous, it was dangerous. But one of the things that fluoride does, and this is why people can check this again for themselves, the first case of fluoride being given to human beings was given to the Jews in the concentration camp.
That's right, yeah.
And the reasons they gave it to them was they said they didn't want them to procreate, they wanted them to be well behaved, and it dulled them.
Docile,
having fluoride water since 1954. And I thought to myself, hang on, there's been so many political parties in Ireland over the years. Who didn't somebody say about this fluoride, maybe we should have a look at that and take it out? No, nobody's ever questioned it. So I thought, well, who's powerful enough to put a poisonous, dangerous chemical into the drinking water, which affects pregnant women, children, memory, all of those things? And yet it was the Catholic Church in 1954 introduced fluoride to the Irish drinking water for two reasons. One, in 1954, the families were huge. No contraception, the 8, 9, 10, 12 kids, they couldn't look after themselves. They couldn't even feed them. And the Catholic Church were at the brunt of this. So they made the decision to introduce this poisonous chemical into the water to tame the Irish. And that's what it's doing today, Richie. That's why nobody is protesting in any real numbers, because they're all fluoridated off their bloody out of their heads.
Yeah.
And when I took fluoride in another form years ago, I was depressed about 20 years ago, and somebody recommended me Prozac. I tried this Prozac. I went back to the doctor after 6 weeks. I said, this is no good. I said, I can't get the horn. And he said, well, that's a side effect to Prozac. I'd be depressed with the horn, or, you know, than be a robot. Now, the thing is, it affects male reproduction, testosterone, and it creates erectile dysfunction. The effect of that being put in the water, Richie, is now, after 50 years later, is the average size of a family in Ireland is three or four.
That's a big family. Do you know what? You've actually blown the minds of a lot of Irish listeners, because they're tweeting me and sending me messages at the moment saying, I didn't know about 1954, about the Catholic Church and that decision. And I know you're right, by the way. Again, that's why I'm not challenging you. You're absolutely spot on here.
And that's the thing, Richie, is, you know, I love Ireland. The Irish people have always been good to me. I have a great relationship with them. But what I've seen as I've grown up is this group of elites who have decided that we, and probably because we're dumbed down. You know, I haven't drank a glass of water in years, and I'd say to people, stop it now, because when you look at our rate of birth deformities, it's through the roof. When you look at the autistic children, it's through the roof. When you look at obesity, it's through the roof. Suicide, we have the second highest. This is not happening for no reason. This is happening by design. And I am not remotely paranoid about what's going on, because I've looked, I'm nearly 60 now, and I've been looking all my life. I haven't had a TV for 35 years. Best thing I'd ever done. I'd say to everybody, get rid of your TV now.
Wow, Kevin,
because
wow.
There's two worlds going on here, Richie. People talk to me about a pandemic. I'm going, hang on a minute. Okay, pandemic. Millions of people dying. No, millions of deaths being attributed to the cold. Okay, so pandemic. Shouldn't I be hearing ambulances everywhere? This is what I was thinking during the lockdown.
Bring out your dead. Bring out your dead. Bring out your dead.
Why aren't the funeral homes overrun? They are now, but they're being overrun by reactions to that gene therapy, which is killing people. And I don't care what people say about what I think. I've based it on studying it, on looking into it, and looking into it with open eyes, which is something a lot of people these days won't do. They'll tell you, I'm an intelligent person because I read the Times. I'm an intelligent person because I'm informed. You know what? If you're getting your news from the mainstream media, you've never gone beyond the tooth fairy. And I think when people start thinking for themselves, they do start asking questions and holding people to account. And these people, they need to be held to account, whether it's Matt Hancock, any of the, you know who the roll call is.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I was thinking the other day about Bill Gates. Bill Gates is angry at the world. And I'll tell you for why I think he's angry at the world. Imagine him as a teenager. Who wants to be friends with the geeky guy? Nobody. Who wants to be friends with Specky Four Eyes? Nobody. Who wants to go out with him? What girls? Nobody. What did he discover? Money. Ah, okay, I can have friends. I can have girls. Bill Gates now, in my opinion, is getting his revenge on the world because he matters now. And he shouldn't matter because he's a bloody computer salesman who now is suddenly authority on the ozone. He's an authority on global warming. This man...
On epidemiology.
Just because you have $1 billion doesn't mean you're not a psycho. Like, we always think of Jack Nicholson banging down the door.
Yeah.
These people believe, like, I thought about this today, Richie. Why has Bill Gates never, ever come out and said, I'm not against population reduction. I don't want the population. He's never done that. And he's been accused of this for years. And that, to me, is very telling. Because in his mind, he's doing a noble thing. And I do think we're talking about population reduction here. I do think they are testing this dangerous gene therapy on people who are too vulnerable. And the reactions, I think, we're creating, we're going to hell in a handbasket. And I'm the most optimistic person you'll ever meet, Richie. But these guys have made a huge mistake here. And what they're going to do is create a whole new race of people who are basically being given COVID in these gene therapies. Yes, it's a synthetic one, although why it's different from the other one is crazy. And when people now, as I'm hearing, more and more ambulances, but those ambulances are the people who are having reactions to the. So the death figures will finally start going up because they hadn't gone up. And you have to ask yourself, pandemic, shouldn't there be millions more dead? Look at the death figures in each country, Richie. Look at Ireland. It's slightly up on last year. Look at the UK. It's slightly up on last year.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not a pandemic.
Do you think they might blame the variants? If the vaccine rollout produces as many really bad adverse effects like death as you think it might do, I suppose that the ace card for them at that stage would be to blame variants, to blame new strains of coronavirus on any deaths. That's what I would do anyway.
Yes. Absolutely, absolutely. And it's a get out of jail free card. But here's the thing, Richie. I think that the new variants are going to come as a result of people's reactions to having COVID put into them. You know, these new variants, now I first was very skeptical because I thought, oh, here we go. It's going to be a vaccine sale. And I wish this was only about money, Richie. I wish this was only about people getting rich off vulnerable, scared people by giving them shit they don't need. I really do. But at this point, I do believe there's a much darker vision here. And George Orwell, it's going to look like a tea party because these guys who are telling everybody, millions of people, assuring them, oh, this is safe. They don't know that. Why are they lying?
It's still in trial. We've got about 2 minutes left, Kevin. I hope you'll come back whenever you feel like it. I'd love to have you back. I've not had a reaction like this to an interview. We have a big audience. It goes mad on Twitter during the programme. It's gone mental with you being on this afternoon. It really has. I wanted to ask you, look, I don't know the first thing about art or about painting, but looking at your paintings online today, if anybody puts Kevin Sharkey's name into a search engine, you'll get thousands of art articles, thousands of reviews. Kevin is a celebrated and much loved artist, and he's obviously gifted. I was thinking, through your art, do you see yourself painting what you've witnessed in the last 12 months? Do you see yourself expressing what has happened to Ireland and to the Irish through this scam on canvas? Do you see that happening?
You know, it's funny you should say that, because what I'm working on at the moment is, do you remember in the old black and white films when the guillotine was there, or they were hanging these guys, and they're all there in the grey sackcloth, and all their heads bowed, a rope round their neck, one fella coming up ready to go through the hole. I'm working on a picture at the moment with Leo Varadkar, Boris Johnson, Bill Gates, all ready to be hung, because these people are committing crimes against humanity. And I couldn't give a damn whether people have a problem with me saying that, because there's a clip you must see, and this is what spurned me to do this artwork. I mean, if anyone wants to see my artwork, I'm kevinsharkeyart.com. But the thing that spurred me to do this was I saw a clip, and people need to look this up, of Bill Gates describing giving an injection to a child. And if you see this clip, he says, and then we plunge the needle right into the child's vein. You're thinking, whoa, hang on a minute. And these are the things that people, they don't question them on, because the big pharma spend $500,000 a day on advertising in the States. So what I'd say to people is, for me right now, painting is always been a joy for me. But this dark cloud that's descended on the world is, for me, it's changing everything. You know, it's changing how I paint, it's changing how I feel about painting. So there's more important things right now, to be honest with you, than painting for me. And letting people know what's happening and what's coming next is, there's no competition. I can paint anytime, but we have a limited window here to wake people up and say, please, just ask questions. Don't take my word for it. Go out, find out for yourself. And when you do, that's the point when you have to ask yourself, what's next? And am I okay with this? And what do I tell my children when they say, well, what did you do? So I was watching Strictly Come Dancing. I didn't have any time to do anything. So I'd say to people, it is scary, but it's also an opportunity to do something about bringing together people, not black, not white, not gay, not Irish, not English. Forget all that crap, because that's exactly what they use to keep you in that
politics,
in that corner. We need to remember that we are humanity, that we're human beings, and the color of my skin is about the relevant of the color of your hair. It doesn't matter. But they have led us to believe that these are our differences. No, we have far more in common than sets us apart, and we need to remember that. And when we do, Jesus, tell you what, Richie, they're big numbers. And these people who are pulling off this criminal, insane hoax, they know that. Why do you think it's happening? Because the marches were getting so big. The protests were getting so big. Governments were being changed because of people's discontent. And now, we're going to ban them marches. So keep your eyes open, ask questions, and it'll be all right in the end, I hope.
KevinSharkeyArt.com. You've been listening to a great Irishman, Kevin Sharkey, on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Will you come back next month? I'd love to talk to you about your own story. Your own story's amazing, Kevin. If you ever wanted to do that, I'd love to have you back. It'll be a pleasure.
For sure, Richie. Listen, it was lovely chatting to you. And thank you for not censoring me, not telling me what I couldn't say, because, you know, honesty is all we have at this stage, and we need to find answers to these questions. So thank you. I really, really appreciate it. And thank you to all your listeners.
You're a gentleman. You've blessed the programme with your presence today. Cheers, Kevin. Thanks for that. The brilliant Kevin Sharkey, live on the Richie Allen Radio Show, Wednesday's programme, just gone 6 o'clock UK time, here in Salford. Loved having Kevin on. Knew all about Kevin for years. Never interviewed him. And I listened to a lot of radio during the day. I was listening to News Talk yesterday afternoon, a program that goes out between 4 and 7 o'clock, as I was getting ready for this. And I heard just a smidgen of him on that program. He was trying to talk about his concerns about the vaccine. He talked a bit about identity politics and racism, and they kind of rushed him off the program. Amazing. Kevin's dad came to study in Ireland from Nigeria, and his mum is an Irish woman. So he's mixed race. He's Irish-Nigerian. Grew up in Ireland, of course. He was born in Ireland. And a great guy. Now, Thomas Binder will be on the programme right soon. He's the Swiss cardiologist who was on the programme with me back in November. His story is truly remarkable. Thomas was taken into custody after speaking out in Switzerland last March about the PCR test. This doctor, this qualified man, he told us about that back in November. He's on Twitter, where he has a huge following, and he talks about the coronavirus response. And, he's great, and he'll be with me in a few minutes' time. Stevie Wonder, then. Stevie Wonder on the Richie Allen Radio Show. I'm Richie Allen, by the way. How you doing if you've just joined the programme? Nice to have you on board today. Right, Stevie Wonder then on the Richie Allen Radio Show. The time is exactly 5 minutes past six. That's UK time, as I said earlier on. I want to welcome back Dr. Thomas Binder to the programme. An extraordinary man. As I said before, the musical interlude there, we caught up back in November last year. Thomas is a respected cardiologist, renowned, you could say, in his own country of Switzerland. And last March, when he saw what was coming down the line with coronavirus and lockdown, and when he learned about PCR testing being used to drive up cases, well, he spoke out. He had the courage to speak out and say that it was wrong. And he was taken into custody for a psychiatric evaluation because he did that. There was nothing wrong with the man, obviously. He spent 6 days in a psychiatric hospital. In fact, he was arrested by an anti-terrorist squad for doing his job, for saying, hang on a second, I'm a doctor, this doesn't make any sense, this is not right. Spoke to him about it last year. He's got a massive following on social media. A lot of people grateful that doctors like him are speaking out. Let's welcome back to the programme Dr. Thomas Binder. Thomas, thanks so much for coming back. How are you?
Hi, Richie. Thank you for having me again. Thanks, I'm fine. And you?
I'm not too bad, thanks. It's really lovely to have you back on. The timing couldn't be better because, things seem to be going from bad to worse here, at least from the UK perspective. They've gotten 30 million people vaccinated, but yet there doesn't seem to be any sign that they're going to allow people go back to their jobs and go back to any sort of normal. One of the questions I was asked to put to you, and we've got loads of time to talk about whatever you want to talk about, was are people being foolish and naive if they believe that things will go back to normal?
Well, it depends what we do. I mean, if we push back, we will win. If we do not push back, we will lose.
So it's black and white. People need to get off their backsides and do more. What can people do? What can ordinary people do, Thomas, to help themselves in this situation?
Well, I guess first they must realize that they were panicked based on exactly zero scientific evidence. For this, you have to switch off the TV and restart your brain and inform yourself from people like you, great journalists who are still reporters, role models for journalists who want to become reporters, or scientists or doctors like me. And I always say, well, do not believe anybody. Do not believe in any expert, including me. Just listen what they are telling to you, and then use your common basic human instinct and your basic knowledge and decide what sounds reasonable and what does sound completely foolish.
I have a list of questions for you, Thomas. You won't be surprised, that were sent in by listeners when I announced that you were coming back. And one of them was to ask you about your considered opinion on how safe the vaccines might be. And one of the questions I was asked to put to you was to get your thoughts on the AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine, which has been hugely controversial in the last couple of weeks. Claims that it might be causing blood clots in people. It was suspended temporarily, as you know, by a number of European Union countries. What can you tell us about what you know about the vaccines, but particularly the AstraZeneca vaccine?
Well, what amazes me is that the critique is concentrated on the AstraZeneca vaccine. I guess the difference between these vector-based DNA injections and the mRNA injections in lipid nanoparticles is probably not a huge difference. I mean, what we can say, usually the development of a vaccine lasts about 10 years. This time it lasted about 10 months. what we can, and above all, this is not just the new vaccine against flu based on attenuated influenza viruses, but this is a totally new technique, never applied in humans before. So the 10-year range is especially important in such a new technique. And we must know that even the animal experiments and other preclinical tests were not made appropriately. I mean, they always told, well, this is a killer virus, so maybe like Ebola, 50% mortality. And if it was a killer virus, of course, we could accept unsafe, somewhat unsafe vaccines. But as we know by now, even if you count the infected, the sick and the deaths, not from SARS-CoV-2, but with SARS-CoV-2, for the most of the populace, SARS-CoV-2 is less dangerous than influenza. And for some people, it is maybe about as dangerous as a serious influenza. So if I look at the risk-benefit ratio for everybody from 0 to 100 years old, I guess the risk of the vaccine is higher than the risk if you are infected. So I wouldn't recommend it to anybody. Children and young people, they have absolutely zero risk from COVID. People above maybe from 70 to 90 with other serious illnesses, they have probably the risk of the same risk as influenza. And in people above 90 or so, there is immunosenescence. So the immune system is getting old and ineffective. And for the same reason, they are at highest risk to die from these viruses. Vaccines against viruses in this age group usually are not effective.
And might be dangerous. Is that right, Thomas? So vaccines in the very old are usually not effective, but might be dangerous too, because their immune systems are not as good as they used to be. Is that right?
Yes. Well, for this, we usually test them for 10 years. And then we know how dangerous they are, and we can do a risk-benefit stratification and decide in any case whether it's reasonable to be vaccinated or not. But exactly this never happened in these mRNA DNA injections. And we know, at least theoretically, that the spike protein, actually what happens, I mean, the body produces, translates these mRNA instructions into the spike protein. And this spike protein highly likely is not only antigenic, so produces antibodies against the spike protein then of the real virus, but has also biological effects. For example, platelet activation that may lead to thrombus formation, but also to immune thrombocytopenia, so to bleeding. And there are some cases that are highly suspicious that this already happened. The problem also is that as in the whole history, we have no real data, and we also have no real data about these side effects. I mean, there are these VAERS and other sites, but only about 1% of the side effects are said to be reported to these sites.
Is that right? This is an important point now, because AstraZeneca has said, and the European Union has said, and the British government has said, that they've given the AstraZeneca jab to tens of millions of people already, and they've only seen a handful of cases of blood clotting. Therefore, they say that's less than you would see in the community at any given time in terms of blood clotting at any given time. So they say it proves that the vaccine is safe. That's what they say. What do you say?
Well, they are the same who tell you that anybody who is tested positive with the draws the nonsense RT-PCR test is either infected, sick, or died from COVID. Actually, before we talk about vaccines, we should talk about the whole still prevailing corona narrative, which is utter unscientific, inhumane, pardon bullshit. There is no scientific evidence whatsoever for this so-called pandemic. I mean, it's actually, if I can explain it in plain English.
Go ahead, Thomas. Absolutely, go ahead.
So the first myth is, it is nonsense to test symptomatic people symptomatic from an acute respiratory infection on one and only one respiratory virus. It is madness to do this with a hypersensitive, unspecific RT-PCR test with this CT threshold above 35 without considering this CT value and the clinical context. And in case of positivity, complementing it with a highly specific confirmatory test, because the detection of theoretically one SARS-CoV-2 RNA fragment does not prove an infection and certainly not a disease provoked by SARS-CoV-2 or a death caused by COVID. And I guess I told it last time, it is the coronation of this already unbelievable insanity to test, and not only to test, but to mass test even asymptomatic people in this matter.
Yeah.
So the whole corona narrative is utter nonsense. And
you can call it bullshit
it's
again.
Even
if you
more
want.
Nonsense to apply vaccines against an illness where after 1 year, we still do not know how many were really infected, how many were really sick, how many really died. It's in any case, it's only a fraction of the numbers,
of the real numbers
who are told us. Huh?
Are you still in shock? You blew the whistle on the PCR test and the fact that it's redundant and useless. You blew the whistle on this and you paid a very big price for that. I was wondering, are you still in shock in some way, Thomas, that your peers didn't support you? Because your fellow physicians must have known what you knew back in March. I'm not saying that you're not intelligent, you obviously are, but others must have known that you were right, and yet they didn't support you. That must be still a very difficult thing to deal with.
Yeah, well, some people say corona is an intelligence test, and I say, no, it is rather a character test. I mean, I guess everybody, also me, of course, especially if these special circumstances, I have lost many old friends, but it were the egoistical ones. And I gained even more new friends, and these are the empathetic people, those who are not only interested for their self-interested, but are caring for the whole human family. And so I have lost the bad friends and won many good, better friends. Yes, actually, what's really disturbing for me, what the most disturbing for me as a doctor, is not the total failure of politics, of the mass media, but of academia, and especially of the fellow doctors. I mean, every doctor must know that not only the test is nonsense. To realize this, you must really go into it. I mean, I can understand that not every doctor takes the time to check the test. If the health authorities and the experts tell them that this test is fantastic, they believe it, this is okay. But every doctor must realize that the indication to use the test is wrong. To test only on one respiratory virus, and to test even asymptomatic patients, not only, as we always did, only the very sick patients, hospitalized patients, who need specific antiviral therapy, and in surveillance systems. And another thing that actually proves that there is no pandemic. I mean, as a medical student, you learn in the first four semesters, at least, some basics in epidemiology for beginners. In normal times, in every county, there is a surveillance system. That's a network of general practitioners and hospitals where every patient suffering from acute respiratory infections is tested for the most important viruses. But in a in an epidemic of national scope, and internationally that would be a pandemic, the first thing you have to establish is a representative cohort. So let's say in Switzerland we have about 8.5 million inhabitants. This group might be 1,000 people. I don't know exactly this. You could ask a statistician, but let's say we create a cohort representative for the populace of 1,000 people, representatives according to age, gender, and so on and so forth. And this cohort is serially tested, not with not validated, not standardized, useless PCR tests, but with antibody tests and tests for T-cell immunity. And then we know in each moment and over time what this epidemic is really doing. And even after 1 year, this basic knowledge of every medical student after four semesters is not applied in any country, as far as I know, at least not in Switzerland. And it per se is absolutely unbelievable and insane, and proves that the authorities know exactly that there is no pandemic.
The authorities know that there's no pandemic. Now, this is there will be people listening to this, and they've just found this program. They're new to this, and they know that they're listening to a qualified man, a cardiologist, a proper doctor, and you've just said the authorities know that there is no pandemic. So the obvious following question is, what's really going on then, Kevin? Excuse me, Thomas, what's going on?
Well, I mean, what we always must know, the force of delusion is very strong. I mean, I do not say everybody in the government or in the health authority does know what he's doing. But in the Federal Office of Public Health, we call it in Switzerland, or in these task forces, in the task force, there are also doctors. And every doctor has this knowledge of a medical student after four semesters. So at least some people do exactly what they are doing. And well, we started in November talking about this. I mean, there is something happening globally in lockstep.
Yeah.
The synchronization is made primarily by the WHO. The WHO says now we have a pandemic. Every government takes out their pandemic plan that is made by the same experts all over the world. And then they are following this pandemic plan in lockstep. And this makes us believe there is a kind of world government. Although not everybody is in this conspiracy, is knowingly in this part of this conspiracy. But if you control the WHO, you control the medical world.
Does Bill Gates control the World Health Organization?
Yeah, well, it's not only Bill. I mean, it's these multi-billionaire genocidal psychopaths, and Bill Gates is one of them. There is Bezos. There is Musk, Zuckerberg, Dorsey, all these are there. I mean, and I don't know what, you know, the German Corona Ausschuss. Do you know the German Corona Ausschuss? It is an extra parliamentary private investigative committee around the lawyer Rainer Füllmich.
Yes.
You certainly know Rainer Füllmich.
Yeah, I've read about it, Thomas. Yeah.
I can really recommend also to your listeners, you go at corona-ausschuss.de. They have many interviews with great people in English as well. So this is also interesting for English people. On this website, there are about, I guess now there are, by now there are 45 sessions of lasting many hours, 4 or 5 hours sometimes. And just a few days ago, they had an absolutely great interview with a Holocaust survivor. Her name is Sharaf, and she actually compared what is happening now with what she had lived through in Germany 1934 to 1945. So we must certainly realize, I mean, everybody realized that almost all basic liberties, basic human rights have gone away, and we are heading directly into fascism. Fascism is by definition the fusion of corporate and state power. And this interview I can really recommend. The mechanisms as tattooing the Jews, and now the unvaccinated vaccinated who are becoming the scapegoats, and might land in concentration camps, and if we do not stop it, maybe are killed one day. We are almost already there. And another great person, I guess she was also interviewed there, is Naomi Wolf.
Yes, yeah, the journalist, yeah.
The American journalist and writer, liberal, but and she wrote a book, I guess, The End of America or so. And there she described the 10 steps from an open society, so-called democracy, into totalitarianism or fascism. And she also says, she also thinks we are now at step 10. And the, like Klaus Schwab says, there is a narrow opportunity to change the world. I guess for us, there is a narrow open window, narrow opportunity to fight back. And it is absolutely important that we unite from left to right, from above to below, from poor to rich, against these genocidal psychopaths.
There's a great irony there. Let me remind our listeners, you're listening this evening to Dr. Thomas Binder. He's a renowned and respected cardiologist. He's in Switzerland. I won't go into again what happened to Thomas last year. It was terrible. He broke ranks and told the truth about the PCR test and lockdowns, and it had severe consequences for him. He's live on today's programme. That's a very profound thing for a Holocaust survivor to say. And I believe Naomi Wolf is Jewish as well. I mean, these people know their history. To compare what's happening to what was going on in Germany in the 1930s should scare the pants or the trousers off of everybody, really, Thomas, really. I mean, people have to wake up to this. You talk about a narrow window, and you mentioned something there a moment ago, which is very important. You said that, you know, people turning against one another, the unvaccinated. We have a situation today where a scientist has written in a national newspaper that Britain must not be held to ransom by people who don't take a vaccine. This guy said that a third wave caused by vaccine refuseniks would devastate our return to normality, and Britain cannot be held to ransom by a minority who don't understand the value of vaccines, risking their own health and that of others. It seems that they've taken a step now to turn people against one another, turn the vaccinated against the unvaccinated. And you've just touched on that. You see that happening now, right?
Well, the divide and conquer was the message to rule by the for the rule of the psychopaths over the empathetic humanity, which is a huge majority. We are maybe about 98%, and the psychopaths are about 2%, and the multi-billionaire psychopaths are a bunch, or maybe a few hundred, a dozen, or a few hundred or so. They always did it like this, and now of course the scapegoats, like the Jews were blamed for spreading diseases already in the Middle Ages. Now the unvaccinated are blamed for spreading a disease. But as I explained before, this disease is highly virtual. I mean, it's highly likely it exists, but it is blown up. I mean, a beta corona common cold virus is blown up by PCR, PR, and masks into a killer virus, and this is an illusion. This house of cards is does not even exist. It is actually virtual. But and the another principle is shock and awe. So the powerful shock the populace, and in awe they accept all insanities. And now it's really the moment where we must unite and say stop, because once we have lost our freedom, and especially if the justice system has completely stopped to function. I mean, it's shattered already, but there are still some judges who are waking up, and this is the last chance to stop this. Because once we have lost our freedom, there is game over. There is the end game. And another interesting thing is, I don't know whether you heard this. Bill Gates once said, and the final solution will be the vaccine. This guy is old enough to know what the term final solution means. And I mean, the incredible thing is that they state everything so openly. You can go on the homepage of the World Economic Forum. There is the whole screenplay, the whole agenda is written there. And you realize that in 2030, everybody will be without possession, but happy. And the whole possession is in the hands of a few multi-billionaire psychopaths. So we will end up as happy slaves, and they will be our nice fathers and mothers. Yeah.
Dr. Thomas Binder is our guest. A lot of tweets on this. Thank you very much. Fanula said that the program cut out on her when the doctor was talking about the 10 stages of moving to totalitarianism. That's a Naomi Wolf piece. You can find that. We will put it on online where you can read it. And I have tweeted out the link to corona-ausschuss.de. I've put that link out there as well on Twitter, so you can follow the steps. Listening to Thomas, you can follow the links that he's given us. I should ask you, in Switzerland then, you're seeing your police forces acting similarly to how they're acting here. Is that right, Thomas? They're becoming real stormtroopers.
Yes, maybe slightly less brutal, but in the end, it's about the same. But, well, I always say if we Swiss do not manage to stop it, nobody can, because I guess we are the only country on this planet with a real element of direct democracy. What we did is there was a we managed to make a referendum against an electronic ID. It's not a vaccine passport, but it's an electronic identity, and this was shut down 2 weeks ago by 2-1. And the next what we did is a referendum against the COVID law. And an anti-terrorist law. And we must know that this anti-terrorist law that sounds so reasonable means actually that the police can decide that anybody is an enemy to the state and can be detained for a year or so. So if you remember what happened to me 1 year ago, if this anti-terrorist law is accepted by the populace, the police can say, well, Dr. Binder is an enemy to the state by his objective information about this pandemic and the vaccine, the so-called vaccines, these injections. So we can he can be detained. I mean, this is really dangerous, and we must stop this in Switzerland. And this might be a signal into the world.
That's very positive, and Thomas. That's very positive news. It's positive news that your parliament there rejected those laws, those bills. That's hugely positive because in this country, the government, the Coronavirus Act passed last year, and contained within the act is the power. The government has the power to instruct, well, not to instruct, but to tell local authorities that if they want to grab people and take them away for testing or screening, whether the person agrees or not, you know.
It was not the parliament. No, this was the populace.
It was the populace. It was a referendum, right?
The parliament is about 200 to 10 on the side of the government.
This is also unbelievable. Yeah.
But we made a referendum in the populace. You can, if you have 100,000 signatories, you can make a referendum against any law. And so we could vote on this, and the populace voted 2-1 against the electronic ID. And the same, I hope, will be true on this anti-terrorist law. On the, I mean, there are three possibilities how we can stop this insanity. There must be masses of journalists that break this spiral of silence. Mass lawsuits and mass protests. And in Switzerland now in spring, really, the mass protests are growing. There were about 4 weeks ago, there were 5,000 people. Now, 2 weeks ago, we were 10,000. And in 2 weeks, we hope we are 20,000. And if this goes on exponentially like this, one day some 100,000 will be in our capital burned. And tell the government and the populace now it's really enough is enough.
Now, Thomas, in this country, the government is going to try and pass a law tomorrow to make it very difficult to protest. I'm sure you're aware of this. Tomorrow they're going to talk, they're going to debate this in Westminster, and then they're going to vote on it. It probably will get voted down, but the government wants to give police the powers to tell people when they can and cannot protest, to tell them what time they must start, what time they must finish, and all sorts of other powers about nuisance and noise and stuff like that. Would you be concerned that the Swiss government might try and do the same, make it difficult to protest?
Yes, well, they are trying already, because in the last manifestation, many didn't wear the masks. So now they say, oh, well, they are a risk, so we must forbid the next manifestation. This is actually currently a debate in Switzerland as well. Yeah, well, imagine, I mean, this actually means that we have even gone more far into fascism than in the German Democratic Republic. You remember there were the manifestations, the so-called Montagsdemonstrationen. First they were 100, then 1,000, 100,000, and then they were 10 million, and the wall fell. And the government of the German Democratic Republic, they allowed these demonstrations. I mean, imagine that. In the GDR, manifestations were allowed, and in UK and maybe even in Switzerland, they will no longer be allowed. I mean, what is this then? Step 11 of fascism?
Yeah, step 11, yeah. And yet you keep your humour. I notice you haven't lost your sense of humour throughout all of this. I suppose in this country they're expecting trouble. The police have been instructed to gather intelligence on protesters that might be planning protests for the summer as the weather gets a bit warmer. I get the feeling, Thomas, that this year is crucial, is it? Is 2021 crucial? I don't want to be, you know, stressing people out or upsetting people, but this year has got to be, something has to happen now. It's no good waiting till next year or 2023. It's got to happen now, right?
Yes, I think so as well. Well, there is also in our north mid-northern latitudes, UK and Switzerland, the flu season is ending now. So by any tricks, they are becoming harder times to keep these so-called case numbers, positive nonsense tests up. So they must go down. I mean, there are many tricks. I mean, you can test for one gene instead of three. Yeah. In Switzerland, for example, we know that only the positive test results are reported and not all negative test results. So this inflates the positivity rate. You can increase the testing rate. Actually, currently in Switzerland, this is happening. They just do more tests. So they try desperately to keep up the case numbers, and which usually are absolutely asymptomatic, formerly called heart and healthy people. So also from this aspect, they are becoming more difficult times. And I mean, even the people who believe in this narrative, they realize that this narrative is not consistent. I mean, it's totally logical. For example, in Switzerland, in the mountains, we like skiing, we like go skiing. And the restaurants should be allowed to open the terrace, actually, we think that these are even closed. But you can queue one centimeter from the other. You can queue for your food, but then you have to sit in the snow.
But right.
I mean, instead of sitting in your family of four could sit on a table and the masked waiter could come to your table and serve it. I mean, even in the official narrative, they are so many consistencies that the people realize there is no scientific basic, no logic, nothing at all. It's just it's
arbitrary,
it's just
nonsense. It's arbitrary bollocks, as we say in Ireland. It's arbitrary bollocks. That's what it is. Let me ask you.
Arbitrariness or despotism. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. A lot of my listeners are concerned that this Klaus Schwab agenda, one of the things contained within it, is to change the system of finance, the system of money, to move it into a digital currency and to basically eliminate cash. That would be a huge problem. It would make things very difficult for people like you and me. Is that something that you've considered or thought about?
Yeah, well, a partner of these multi-billionaire psychopaths, obviously, is China. I mean, even if you do not know anything about this, if you are a reasonable, intelligent person, after 1 year, you should no longer believe that this China wood production from Wuhan was the outbreak of a pandemic of a killer virus. I mean, trucks that sprayed disinfectants in the air, all these people in the penguin suits and people suddenly dying in the streets, but always landing on their hands. You can watch these on YouTube. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's a China wood B-movie production. And so the pandemic didn't start there, and we can actually prove this. There was about, I don't know, maybe in September, in October or so, there was a first study from Italy that proved they examined, I guess, they had specimens of people who had lung cancer. They checked those specimens for the presence of SARS-CoV-2, and they found that this was present in, I don't know, maybe 13% or so. So in September 2019, the virus was already endemic in Italy, so probably in the whole Europe, maybe in the whole world. So there was not an outbreak in China. This was a show to scare the Western populace. And then we thought, well, China is far away. Then there was a month of silence, and after a month, suddenly we saw these strange pictures from Bergamo, northern Italy, and then we were scared, especially we Swiss, or the Italians, of course, first, but then also we Swiss. I mean, this is a few kilometers from our border. And then at the same time, we saw pictures from Wuhan that said, oh, we have heroically fought this battle and won this battle. And so every European, every Westerner realized, oh, well, we have to do the same. We must accept a totalitarian Chinese system with lockdowns, and we accepted this. An interesting point is also that in event 201, I guess most of your listeners will know it.
The war
in
game.
In October 2019, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundations, World Economic Forum, and Johns Hopkins University did a coronavirus pandemic exercise in New York. And they were everybody was Westerner, except, I guess, one from Singapore and George Gao. George Gao is the chief of the Chinese CDC, so the CDC, American CDC equivalent in China. And it was the same George Gao who participated. And we must say that the simulation said that the outbreak was in South America, so not in China, South America. So maybe the CDC boss from Chile or so would be reasonable. But why was George Gao there from China? And it was the same George Gao who, at the end of December or beginning of January 2020, told the WHO about 27 cases of pneumonia in China. 27 cases of pneumonia in 1.4 billion people. I mean, they must have millions of pneumonias every year, and usually China is closed. So why should China report 27 cases of pneumonia to the WHO?
Yeah.
And with this, the whole thing started. Then came to Drosten with his non-science paper that was peer-reviewed in 24 hours, with this made-up nonsensical test that is hypersensitive and unspecific. And at the end of January, there was the same Drosten who was in a group that published a study in the New England Journal of Medicine that there was alleged asymptomatic transmission of this virus, which we always knew, and we know by now by many studies, does not exist. There is no epidemiological relevant asymptomatic transmission. And this alone is the reason why all these measures, anti-social distancing, face masks, quarantine, isolation, contact tracing, lockdowns, do not work, because they work only for sick people. So the asymptomatic, formerly called healthy people, do not take these measures. Yeah.
Can I ask you, we've got about 3 or 4 minutes left today, about your own situation. I know there was going to be an investigation, an inquiry. You know, you've touched a lot of people in the last 6 or 8 months or 10 months, really, you know, that you had the courage to do what you did and that you paid such a big price for it. So people look out for you and they want to know that you're going to be okay. How are you at the moment, and what is the situation with your own job and your own ability to go back to work? How is that going for you now?
Well, you know, I have my own practice, so independent, yeah. And after these 6 days in psychiatry custody, I restarted to work, of course. I never had a psychiatric problem. And at that time, 1 year ago in Switzerland, I was not the first on this planet. There were wonderful people like Suharit Bhakti, Wolfgang Wodarg, and others. But maybe I was about the first in Switzerland who stood up against this insanity. But now, after 1 year, I am connected globally. I mean, in Switzerland alone, we are 200 doctors, hundreds of scientists, and thousands of supporters that are in the group. So we are connected. So if they try to destroy one of us, the others help them. We have also great lawyers in this group who help us. And personally, I did this administrative investigation first, but this is on the closure. We cannot look in it. So now in the next weeks and months, I will sue the government and maybe also the media. I don't know yet. We have to know this. But I am well and stronger than ever. They tried to destroy me, but unfortunately, they got the wrong one. I mean, I'm not so... I cannot be destroyed, so...
They messed with the wrong doctor. They messed
with
the wrong doctor.
If I have right, I defend it. What is important, I'm not the kind of person who does always have to be right. These are especially these narcissists, these narcissistic village idiots in the government. But if I have right, then I fight for the rights. And actually, I do it not for myself. I mean, this year I'm becoming 60. I had a good life. I'm doing this for the future of my children, of my grandchildren, of your grandchildren, of the whole human, empathetic human family. And this is important, whether we stand on the left, on the right, we have to forget our ideology. This is very important. We must free ourselves from our ideology. This is painful. It is painful to become free, to realize that the Western world was not always the good one, but rather the contrary. But once we have realized this, we can be free, and we must connect and let not longer be divided and conquered by a bunch of multi-billionaire psychopaths, but let's unite and stop this insanity. And once we have stopped it, we can debate in what direction we want to go. But first, we have a common aim. If we lose this battle against the psychopaths, I guess we are lost forever.
Thanks for coming back, Thomas. And I will, of course, invite you back again. The website you should go to is thomasbinder.ch. But as well as that, you can follow Thomas on Twitter. His Twitter handle is pretty simple. It's @Thomas_Binder. So it's @Thomas_Binder. Tens of thousands of followers there, reading his tweets every day. You've been listening to the cardiologist, the courageous Dr. Thomas Binder, live on the line from Baden in Switzerland. Thomas, thanks for your time. And I mean it when I say thanks for being you and for having the courage to speak out. Thank you.
Thank you, Richie. And people out there, heads up and let's unite and send this bunch of psychopaths and narcissistic black eyes into nowhere land, and then celebrate our freedom and human rights. Bye-bye. Have a great time.
You too, Thomas. Have a lovely evening. Dr. Thomas Binder, live on the line from Baden in Switzerland. And you heard him, of course, on Wednesday's Richie Allen radio show, 7 minutes to 7 o'clock. What he said there about the identity politics, and Kevin Sharkey touched on it in hour one, I've bored the absolute pants off of you for years talking about this. It's not my theory, of course. I didn't come up with the theory, which I had. It would mean I was very, very clever. But we have. I figured this out back about 10 years ago. I figured out that left, right, gay, straight, all of these identities that we've divided ourselves into. I remember seeing The Simpsons one time. And there's a cartoon that's loved by Bart and Lisa Simpson. It's called Itchy and Scratchy. It's about a homicidal mouse that tries to kill a cat, his sworn enemy. And one time, the cat got a hatchet or an axe and chopped the mouse in two. And each part replicated into another part. So each half doubled. So now you had four mice. So then the cat got the axe again and chopped up the four mice into eight half mice, if you understand. All of a sudden there were 16 mice, and so on. And over the years we've been kind of programmed into dividing and subdividing again ourselves into categories and pigeonholing ourselves into these identity groups. Some great men and women have written about this for years. And I wonder, are people starting to realise now that it doesn't matter a damn? You know, as I said before, your sexual orientation doesn't make you a man or a woman, or doesn't make you any less a man or a woman, no matter what you are. Obviously, these are things, these are truths that we should hold self-evident, but no matter what it is, no matter what your identity. I figured that out years ago after being, you know, somebody who followed politicians on the left most of my life. It dawned on me, Jesus, this is nonsense, this. And surely to God and sunny Jesus, more and more people are seeing now that this agenda doesn't discriminate. It doesn't. You have white people thinking, oh, white Europeans are under attack from Islam and all of that bollocks. And then you have people in Eastern European, in Asian countries that have been carpet bombed into oblivion by the US and France and Israel and the UK for years, quite rightly thinking, Jesus, we're under attack from the West. And all of this was designed to get every group of people on planet Earth to believe that they were unique and special and that they were uniquely being targeted by some invisible enemy. And that's what it is. That's ultimately the simplicity of it. Get people to subdivide into groups and get each group to think that they are uniquely being punished for the very fact that they exist to begin with. And while all of that was going on, this agenda was just going along quietly in the background. That's the essence of it. I try and tell that to Trump supporters. I try and tell it to Biden supporters, to Bernie Sanders supporters. You're a bunch of idiots. It doesn't matter. You're not uniquely targeted there. There isn't a war on whites, although Dr. Paul Craig Roberts disagrees with that. He'll be on the programme tomorrow night. There isn't a war on blacks. There's not a war on Jews. There's no war on Muslims. There's a war on every single one of us. And you have to see that now. You have to see that. I didn't articulate it as well as I might have. It's been a long year so far this year. I'm looking forward to my April week off. I'm looking forward to that. But you get the point, don't you? Forget about Trump and Clinton and Obama and Johnson and Keir Starmer. It's nonsense. It's an illusion. It's an illusion to get you thinking as a gay man in the gay community, as a socialist, as a libertarian, as a conservative. No, you're flesh, bones, blood, you're a soul, you're a person. We're all the same. We're the same, but we're not one. And because of the nonsense, the agenda has gotten to where it is now. It's at the checkpoint in the game of chess. That's where it is. It's time to kind of wake up and realise that we are really all in it together against this enemy that was brilliantly described there by Dr. Thomas Binder. I'll be back with two more guests tomorrow. I'll see you then. You look after yourselves and one another. And thanks so much to Kevin Sharkey, the brilliant Irish artist and actor and politician, former politician, and to Dr. Thomas Binder. Love you. See you tomorrow. Bye from me. Bye now.